Jesse Corcoran Podcast.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Stassen, alongside Jeff Worthing, and welcome to the annual East-West Bowl as we get ready to watch some of the best college players in the nation.
That's right, Dave. It does seem like the most flamboyant personalities came to the forefront, and they are here. Let's meet the players from the East.
DeMarcus Williams, University of Georgia.
T.J. Jackson, Wayne State University.
Tavarius Smith King, Merrimack College.
Kyle Royal, Smoochie Wallace, University of Miami.
Desquarius Green Jr., University of Notre Dame.
Ibrahim Moizus, University of Tennessee at Chattanooga.
Jack Marius Tack Theratrix, Michigan State University.
The Isaiah T. Billings Clive, Coastal Carolina University.
The Jasper Probenkruk III, South Carolina State University.
Lee Oz Maxwell Jr., East Carolina University.
Jamaris Jamar Jamarison Lamar, University of Middle Tennessee.
Devoyne Showerhandle, University of Southern Mississippi.
Hingle McKringleberry, Penn State University.
Le Carpetron Duke Marriott, Florida Atlantic University.
Jadinkalich Morgun, University of South Florida.
Xmas Jackson Flaxen Waxen, California University of Pennsylvania.
Now let's meet the players from the West.
Vegetarian Jeffers Ben, Texas A&M.
DeGlester Hadunkachud, University of Wisconsin.
Swervathan L. Gooding Splat, Saskatchewan University.
Quatchvo Quatchvo, San Jose State University.
Ajima Taz Buckshank, Stanford University.
Visa 12 Washing Beard, Jones College.
Shakira Kwan TGIF Carter, University of Northern Arizona.
X Wayne at Aliciousness, Missouri Western State University.
Sequester Grundle Plith MD, Adams State.
Scoise Velociraptor Malois, South Dakota State University.
TJ AJ RJ / 4th the 5th, Albion College.
San Diego State University.
Donkey Teeth, Boise State University.
Torque
Lewith, Nevada State Penitentiary.
The player formerly known as Mouse Cop, University of Missouri, Columbia.
Dan Smith, BYU.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Tuesday, November 29th, 2022, only 78 days remaining until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida. How you doing, kids? You are at jconthelinedotcom. We have soccer at noon today. Now, I was at Mission Taco with my friend Everett when the first World Cup game involving the United States was going on. It was about, you know, noon again. It was last Monday. Yeah, last Monday. And I'm expecting, oh, this place is going to go nuts because we've been told that every place showing the game is going to go nuts. And the gals behind the counter, they didn't even know what was going on. And I told them, I said, yeah, the place is going to really fill up here in the next few minutes because the soccer game is on. And just get ready. So they were looking for it. What channel is it on? And they didn't know anything. And which is fine because that's not their job. Their job is to serve us tacos and make great margaritas, which they do, by the way. And so we're sitting there, and the crowd never materialized. It wasn't any busier than it would have been on a normal Monday afternoon, which is interesting because when the women were in the finals there a couple of years back. I remember it was a Sunday morning. We went down to the Grove, and I mean, they had TV monitors out in the streets, for God's sakes. And it was like 9 o'clock in the morning or something because of the time change. And we're sitting there on a Sunday morning drinking Bloody Marys and watching this thing, and you couldn't move in the place. And people were just cheering on everything. And it's like, interesting how these badass women were drawing more attention, not only to their championship, but also, you know, to the game of soccer itself. And I'm thinking to myself, this is very, very unusual, because there are people, could give you names of broadcasters in St. Louis who have been railing on the idea of the fact that why do we even acknowledge women's sports, women's athletics? Nobody cares, nobody bothers. And 99% of the time, unfortunately, you'd probably be right. But when it comes to the soccer thing, and also I would throw in their volleyball. Nobody cares about men's volleyball. They love the women's volleyball because they give them 2 postage stamps to put on and say, here, go play now. It's like, where's the rest of the swimsuit? So good old-fashioned sexism takes over again. Anyhow, if they lose today, we won't be talking about soccer again for quite a while, probably until next spring when we start having real St. Louis FC games that will, or SC or whatever the hell, AM, PM, I don't know. They put a special secret code at the end of the name. I don't know. I'm trying, like I said yesterday, I'm trying very hard to learn about soccer, to appreciate soccer, and to become fluent in the language of Ted Lasso. That's all I know. So we'll see what happens today. I used to be able to get the Blues games on this thing called NHL 66, and you just sit there and punch it up on your computer, and boom, there's the Blues games. And, you know, like a lot of great things, somebody messed with it, and now you can't get it without something special, and it's not free anymore. So I was listening to the game online, and between periods, it's like, yeah, we'll have the between periods highlights. And this kid, Alex Ferrario, who can't say his name without saying the words "with you" after his name. You think I'm kidding? Go ahead and listen to it on 101 ESPN sometime. And every time he says his name, Alex Ferrario, with you, he's incapable of saying his name without "with you" at the end of it. Anyhow, they're like, okay, we'll go to the highlights. You know what the highlight was? The fight. Great, great. Terrific choices over there. And you got to remember, so many things that happen in sports talk radio in St. Louis, and for that matter, around the country now, are dictated by one guy. It was the guy who was the program director of 590 The Fan back about, I would say, maybe 15 years ago. And that station did pretty well back then. It did pretty well because they had tremendous hosts. And so he basically took those ratings for that radio station and went running around the country going, see what I can do, see what I can do, and has hogtied a good chunk of American sports talk radio by presenting himself as this sports talk radio guru, like a consultant. And he flies around all over the country and visits these stations. He has these conventions and symposiums, and people sit there and talk about, you know, what they do and how they do it. And he's the guy making all of the decisions for a lot of these big sports talk radio stations all over the country, including in St. Louis. The guy looks just like Uncle Fester, and, you know, he preaches, you know, bullshit stuff. I don't know if it's all bullshit. I do know that a lot of it is bullshit. Like, one of the things he says is there's always, you always have to have controversy. Always have to have controversy. Now, generally speaking, sure, in any sort of presentation, you could be talking about theater, for God's sakes. You could be talking about a movie script, a television show, and certainly within the realm of presenting any sort of electronic media, if you have a good story where there is controversy, sure. But what they're doing is they're sort of like manufacturing controversy. I'll give you an example. I got stuck working with a guy for, it wasn't long, thank God, and he was a disciple of this consultant I'm telling you about. And as is so often the case in sports talk radio, you're not talking about sports. You're talking about movies and TV shows and restaurants and all that. And eventually you get around, oh, yeah, by the way, the Cardinals played last night. They lost. Anyhow, back to the restaurant. Yeah. Anyhow, this guy I got stuck working with on a show on an AM station in St. Louis, sports talk station, Glenn Fry of the Eagles died. And he calls me up the night before and goes, okay, tomorrow, you know, I'll talk about what a jerk Glenn Fry was, how he sucked, and then we'll go on to this. And I go, hold it. What, you're going to do what? He's like, yeah, I'll talk about how Glenn Fry sucked, and then you guys, if you guys want to, you know, argue with it, you can do that. And then we'll move on. I go, hold it. Why are we going to talk about how Glenn Fry sucked? Glenn Fry didn't suck. The Eagles were and continue to be, even without Glenn Fry, one of the greatest supergroups in the history of music. What information do you have that Glenn Fry was a dick? Well, we have to have controversy. We have controversy. Like, so you're going to just like make up some controversy because a consultant told you that there always has to be controversy? Yeah, you don't know anything. There's always got to be controversy. This guy, by the way, I'm talking about, the way he ended up on the radio is he won a contest. The radio station said, you know, we're looking for the next great sports talent in St. Louis. And so you submit a tape. You sit there in the basement with your little Fisher-Price tape recorder and you go, and now for the sports, the Cardinals are on their way to another championship. And then you send that into the station and they probably got about five entries and they picked the one that sucked the least, I guess. And this guy won. This is how he got his radio show. He won a contest. He was very, very impressed with himself. And I'm like, you always talk, there has to be controversy because the consultant told you. So let me just ask you, when Stan Musial, this was right after Stan Musial died, this is before I was working together with these guys. When Stan Musial died, did you have one person on the show talk about how Stan Musial sucked and was no good? Well, no. Well, then we're not going to do it with Glenn Fry. And I ended up just, he wouldn't budge. And so I said, well, I'm taking the day off tomorrow. I'm not going to be part of any of this. And that was the beginning of the decline of that whole thing. But, you know, when your radio station is being run by a boot salesman, I don't know, I guess that's what you get. Alex Ferrario with you. See, that's what a consultant is supposed to do. Consultant is supposed to listen to the on-air talent and say, you don't have to say with you after every time you say your name. It's annoying. But they haven't gotten around to that. It would also be helpful if the consultant told about, it seems like the entire sports community has lost the ability to pronounce the word Purina. Purina. It includes the word pure, as in Purina. Okay, Purina. But all these guys are saying Purina. And that would include Dan McLaughlin. It would include Mike Claiborne and about a half a dozen other guys who can't pronounce Purina. Then again, Dan McLaughlin has been mispronouncing Rick Ankiel's name for 20 years. You keep saying Ankiel, Ankiel. The accent on the second syllable. It's not. It's Ankiel. Rick Ankiel. Not in Dan McLaughlin's world. Rick Ankiel. Where's the consultant now? And I like Dan and I like Mike, but it's just one of those really, really annoying things. And I saw a lot of reports, including my buddy Les Trent, who is on Inside Edition. Great guy. And he almost never does anything to embarrass himself, even though those tabloid shows can be sort of embarrassing, like quite a bit of the time. But they were doing the story about the passing of Irene Cara, who sang the song, you know, Fame, I'm Gonna Live Forever. Turns out she's been living in a dump about a half an hour from where I'm sitting right now in Largo, Florida, and claimed that she was blacklisted by the show business community for some odd reason. I'm not really sure. I'm not going to say she was destitute, but she wasn't exactly living the high life. Let's put it that way, down in Largo, Florida. So they're doing the story on Inside Edition, and they talk about how she was singing the song Fame while Jennifer Beals was dancing. And they showed the iconic audition of Jennifer Beals' character in Flashdance. But over the course of time, apparently people have forgotten the fact that Jennifer Beals didn't do any of the dancing in Flashdance. It was just, you know, a lot of very creative and very expert editing, let's put it that way. And there was a gal, what the hell is her name? Hold on here. Yeah, Maureen Jahan. Maureen Jahan. And I remember this because what happened was, you know, Fame came out. The movie was a big hit. And a couple of years later, this chick, Maureen Jahan, who's a professional dancer and like half gymnast too, because you remember some of those dance scenes. Good grief, she was good. And she was the one who actually did the dancing. She was basically a body double for Jennifer Beals. Jennifer Beals, a very talented actress and really, really pretty, but not a dancer. And in fact, this Maureen Jahan was kept hidden from the press because the filmmakers didn't want to ruin the illusion. But a couple of years later, Maureen Jahan said, hey, wait a minute, I did all this dancing and I would like some credit for it. And so she came out of hiding and started, you know, doing appearances, but nobody really cared. People just wanted to believe. It's like Rudy. Nobody wants to find out the truth that only about 3% of the movie Rudy actually took place. And I guess sort of like that, people wanted to believe the illusion. In fact, it was three different dancers that did the performing scenes in Flashdance. Maureen Jahan, who I just mentioned, and then there was another one. It was a gymnast by the name of Sharon Shapiro, and she did it. They just kept putting the wig on different people. And if you remember, they shot sort of like with light in the background, so it produced an effect where you didn't see what people thought was Jennifer Beals' face. But they just kept changing the wig. So like, okay, we need a leap through the air. All right, Sharon Shapiro, put the wig on. But then, if you remember, there's also a breakdancing scene. And they're like, okay, we need somebody to do that. And there was a performer by the name of Crazy Legs. You think I'm making this up? I'm not. The performer's name was Crazy Legs. And Crazy Legs was brought in to do the breakdancing scene. So what you see in Flashdance is actually four different people. Jennifer Beals, a gymnast, a breakdancing guy, and a professional dancer. Ah, Hollywood. I did dumb thing last night. Got all the way to the movie theater for a screening of the new movie Babylon. This is by the guy who made La La Land, and Brad Pitt is in it, a bunch of actors. And I got all the way to the theater only to realize that it was a week off. The screening is next Monday night. So I apologize for telling you that I would review that movie because it's not out yet. It hasn't been shown to the critics yet, but I'll get it right. You know, I blame this all on this Vertigo thing. Now, yesterday I went back to the doctor. It's not a doctor. It's a physical therapist who specializes in this stuff. And, you know, they spin you around and they're trying to readjust the crystals in your ear canal and all this stuff. At one point, there was a discussion of a different facility that they were talking about sending me to where they have a gyroscope for humans. It's sort of like those scenes in the movie, The Right Stuff, where they're spinning the astronauts around to make sure that they could handle the sensations of being in outer space. And if you know what a gyroscope is, you know, you're probably thinking to yourself, I don't think I would like to get in that thing. They should just call it what it is, a puke machine. But this is the first time I've ever had to deal with the sensations of vertigo, and this has been going on for almost a month now, and I don't like it. And there's no medicine you can take. Oh, you can take motion sickness stuff too, but it'll put you to sleep and then you can't function. But I'm telling you, it messes with every aspect of your life, and I'm just going, to blame the fact that I'm a week off on my calendar. I just blame that on the vertigo too. Now, they did do a procedure on me yesterday, and I'm feeling a little better today, so it's possible that maybe they got this. Maybe they got it. It's also possible I've talked myself into it. So we'll see. We'll find out like in the next 2 to 3 days. But when you start asking around, you find out how many people at some point in their life have dealt with this. I was talking to somebody yesterday. You know, we talked about the fact that Mike Bush, back when he was doing our sports on the old Breakfast Club show, back in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, he was off all the time because he was having this awful vertigo. You don't even go down the stairs. You'll fall down and kill yourself. So it's, you know, it's very, very unpleasant. But knowing what a lot of people, especially people my age, are dealing with health-wise these days, the stuff that people are having to walk around with and still try to go to their jobs and be part of the family and everything like that while they're suffering from some, you know, awful thing. I'm going to stop complaining here. I probably have it pretty good. Oh, here's Will Smith with Trevor Noah. Hold on here.
walking out to a booming applause, actor Will Smith addressed his infamous Oscar slap during an in-depth and sometimes emotional interview on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah Tuesday night.
That was a horrific night, as you can imagine. You know, there's many nuances and complexities to it, you know. But at the end of the day, I lost it.
Oh, wow! Smith assaulted Chris Rock on stage after the comedian made a joke about Smith's wife, Jada, who is balding due to the skin disease, alopecia.
You just never know what somebody's going through. And I was going through something that night, you know? And not that that, you know, justifies my behavior at all.
He didn't expand on what he was going through, but Smith told Noah many events led him to walking up on that stage.
It was a lot of things. It was the little boy that watched his father beat up his mother, you know. It's, you know, all of that just bubbled up in that moment. You know, that's not who I want to be.
Gil King spoke to Smith in March before the Oscars about the domestic abuse he says he saw growing up.
My childhood was equal parts pain, love, and hope. It was a difficult place to forge love.
Okay, man, enough of this. So let me see if I get this right, Will. Because you saw so much domestic violence in your own home as a little boy, and you were horrified on a daily basis by what your father was doing to your mother. You hated that so much that in front of a national television audience, in a tuxedo, you got out of your chair and went up and punched a comedian. Okay, next. Oh, back to the soccer thing. Even my very close friends who are soccer aficionados have at least acknowledged the fact that these 0-0 ties that you have in soccer all the time are probably hurt the game, and it keeps it from being what we were told soccer is going to be here in America someday, although that's never happened. We've been told that now for 50 to 100 years. Anyway, it is interesting that the NFL, the NBA, National Hockey League, Major League Baseball, all of these leagues have instituted rule changes somewhere along the line. You know, the NFL, every year, there's so many rule changes. You really have to stay on top of things. NBA, obviously putting in the three-point play, and there's other things they did. National Hockey League, they basically got rid of the center line, and they're always, you know, tweaking the rules. And Major League Baseball, obviously, very controversial rule changes, many of which are going to be instituted starting next year. All of these leagues, all of these sports have made pretty major, pretty significant rule changes. All but one, soccer. Don't touch soccer. The one sport that could probably benefit most from a couple of rule changes. I'm not saying that all of a sudden let them use their hands or anything, but how come the soccer people haven't come along and said, well, let's do what the other major sports have done. Let's change the game a little bit, a couple of rule changes, and maybe we can pick things up. Maybe we won't have 0-0 ties. I don't get it. I'm standing in the Austin, Texas airport the other day on Thanksgiving morning trying to get back to St. Louis. And, you know, when you fly Southwest, you have that thing where you have to get in that queue. You have to get in that line thing. Is that all right, you know, numbers 1 through 43 now, line up here in group 2. You know, and you got to do what they say. So I got up, I get my little line, I'm in number 42, and I'm standing there, and there's a family in front of me. It's a guy who appears to be, I would say, maybe early 60s, fairly large guy, and the wife and a couple of kids, and then what looked like were probably grandkids. There's like six of them, and we're waiting for our turn to board, and you look ahead, and you see people in wheelchairs and stuff like that who are doing the pre-boarding. And I tapped the guy on the shoulder, and I keep in mind, this is a complete stranger, and I tapped him on the shoulder. I said, why don't you go ahead and pre-board? They let blind people get on the plane before everybody else. And he turns around, and he goes, blind people? I said, yeah, go ahead, you can pre-board. They let blind people get on. And he looks at me like, what are you talking about? Keep in mind, I'm a total stranger, and it's a sort of a stressful situation. It's Thanksgiving morning, and everybody's trying to get home in time for dinner, okay? And the guy's looking at me like, what are you talking about? And I'm just starting to see the beginning of some irritation in his eyes. And I say one more time, no, you can, if you're blind, you can go get on the plane ahead of everybody else. And he's looking at me like, what are you talking about? At which point, I just tapped him on the front of his pullover shirt, which had the insignia of American Umpiring Association. And the family busts a gut. And a couple of the people standing around who are watching this develop, they start laughing. I'm telling you, it was like 15 minutes later, I saw him on the plane ahead of me, and they were still laughing about this. I enjoyed myself. Did I mention that I was shopping for a soccer hat the other day at West County Mall? I go in there, I go, oh, I'll get myself a soccer hat. I'll get swept up in the whole thing. I'm not a soccer fan, but, you know, this is going to be such a big deal for St. Louis, for a big chunk of St. Louis. Hey, I'll go along with it, get the hat. $36. $36 for a fucking hat. Cardinal hats were like $26. Where does the soccer team get off charging $10 more for what is cloth and a piece of cardboard? Probably costs about $3 to manufacture. And not only selling it for $36, $10 more than for a Cardinal hat. I'm sorry, I'll go hatless. But at least in that store, there was somebody to help me. I was in Kohl's. Now, Kohl's is not a store that I generally go to, but my daughter needed to go to Kohl's for something, so I go in there, and I'm walking around, and I figure, I don't know if there's anything I need here. And then there were a couple of things. I was like, oh, well, now, wait a minute. I could probably use some T-shirts, and it looks like these T-shirts, some sort of two-for-one thing or something like that. Okay, maybe two-for-one, it might be a deal. Let me look for the price. Finally, after not finding a price anywhere on the actual box, nowhere on the shelf where it's being displayed, no markings anywhere of a price, and you guessed it, nobody in the store to help you out. Walked all over the place looking for, you know, if I stole something, if I grabbed that box and stuffed it in my pants, I bet you they'd be on me in about 10 seconds. But trying to have somebody, you know, do what the store is supposed to do at the absolute minimum, put the fucking stuff out there and tell me how much it is. And they can't even do that. And I find that to be the case in a lot of places. I'm not just picking on Kohl's. How can you open the store every day? How can you be a store manager and you open up the store without prices on the material? Oh, and then this one, and then this one. So I'm thinking about replacing a leather recliner that I have here in the office, because the one I have, I don't think is providing enough back support for me. And it's getting a little old. And I just figure, okay, maybe I'll go after a new recliner. So I get online and I just Google something about recliners and all this stuff comes up. It's like, oh, good. All right. And go ahead, do this yourself and see if they do this to you too. But I get on and before it will show me any recliners, I'm required to put in personal information, including my email address. I'm like, well, fuck you. I'm not doing that. I'll go to a different site. Go to a different site. Same thing. I've been to probably 6 or 7 different sites involving recliners, and it's almost like it's all being run by the same outfit or something, because in all cases, it takes me to a window where before I'm allowed to see the prices or any further information on any of the recliners, I have to put in personal information, including my email address. Fuck you. It doesn't work that way. I'll sit on the floor before I do that. You really wonder when you see the economic reports and all of the stuff that they always splash up there on the screen about consumer spending and tendencies and the research that they do. I wonder when somebody's going to come along and say, you know, the American retail industry is losing like $60 billion a year in sales because of stupid shit like this. All right, Jay Leno cracked jokes on Sunday night on his way to his first stand-up show since he burned himself. He said, we got 2 shows tonight, regular and extra crispy. It's pretty good. Rolling Stone put together a list of the 50 worst decisions in music history. The whole list is at rollingstone.com. You've got Woodstock organizers celebrating the festival's 30th anniversary with that horrific riot, Woodstock 99. That's number five. Eric Clapton going on this anti-COVID vaccine rant and bunch of conspiracies and everything a couple of years ago. Decca Records passing on signing the Beatles in 1962. Jerry Lee Lewis marrying his 13-year-old cousin in 1958. And number one, the Rolling Stones hiring the Hell's Angels to be security for their 69 concert at Altamont. Peter Frampton starring along with the Bee Gees in Sgt. Pepper, the movie. Got to be on there somewhere, but it's not in the top 10. All right, this Casey Anthony shit show is going to pop up on Peacock starting tonight. Late Night Jimmy Fallon's got Whoopi Goldberg. Who the hell wants to see more of her? Jimmy Kimmel, Billy Crystal, Sally Field on with Colbert. James Corden has Chloe Grace Moretz, and Trevor Noah's got Pam Grier. Babylon, did I mention the screening wasn't last night? The trailer is up on the internet, though, if you want to check that out. Hot off their Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, sources say the Eurythmics are getting set for a reunion. I didn't mention this on the podcast yesterday, but I did put it up on Facebook. A little birdie has told me that Jeff Lynne of ELO will be touring in 2023, and St. Louis will be one of the stops. We'll see. This is what I am told, though. All right, birthdays today. Russell Wilson, Denver Broncos quarterback, married to Ciara, 34. Anna Faris from Scary Movie and Mom and all that stuff, 46. Don Cheadle, one of our great actors, 58 today. Andrew McCarthy from St. Elmo's Fire and Pretty in Pink, less than zero. Weekend at Bernie's, Mannequin, 60 today. Kathy Moriarty from Raging Bull, 62. Rahm Emanuel, former mayor of Chicago and one of the operatives in the Clinton White House, 63. Howie Mandel, 67. Joel Cohen, one of the co-directors of Fargo, Raising Arizona, that stuff. Big Lebowski, 68 today. Chuck Mangione, 82. That was my attempt at a flugelhorn. And my hero, oh, God. Gary Shandling would have had a birthday today, but we lost him in 2016.
The A-List Interview with JC and the Morning Show, Graham.
We're talking with Gary Shandling. Gary, three ACE Awards. You're probably tripping over them all over the house, huh?
Well, I don't have them all over the house, JC. It's not like they're all over and you go, oop, honey, I tripped on an ACE Award. Yeah, actually, we won three, which is great, and the Illegal Cable Awards are next week.
Oh, good. We'll be looking forward to that.
Maybe win one or two of those.
Pure genius, that guy. Pure genius. I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus by Jimmy Boyd. Entered the top 40 on this date, 1952. 63 years ago today, 1959, they televised the Grammys for the first time. This is the date of Natalie Wood drowning in a boating accident off of Santa Catalina Island, California. She was only 43. And have you ever been asked by somebody about who your favorite Beatle was? It's like if you got a house full of sons and daughters and somebody said, you know, which is your favorite kid? You can't answer a question like that. You have favorite things about each of your kids and of each of the Beatles. Everybody loves, still loves the talent, but especially when you go back to the 60s. You know, everybody loved the way Paul McCartney just captivated a television audience. People love the nonconformity, I guess you would say, and the brilliance of John Lennon. Other people liked Ringo just because he was like the runt of the litter of puppies, you know, and it was sort of like he seemed like the underdog, and a lot of people were attracted to him for that reason. And then there was George Harrison. And for me, you know, if you put a gun to my head and you said, who's your favorite Beatle, you got to pick one, I would probably pick George Harrison for a lot of reasons. And those awful choices young men and women make in their teens and 20s came back to get him, smoking those goddamn cigarettes. Because he was only 58 when we lost him in 2001. And I remember hearing the news, and I remember how I felt for the next couple of days and weeks after the passing of George Harrison. I mean, losing John Lennon was so horrific, because he was only 40 years old, and it was a murder, and it was just so shocking. And to this day, people still have a sort of a visceral reaction on the anniversary of the passing of John Lennon. But the George Harrison one was just sad. Here's Ringo.
The last weeks of George's life, he was in Switzerland, and I went to see him, and he was very ill, and he, you know, he could only lay down. And while he was being ill and I'd come to see him, I was going to Boston because my daughter had a brain tumor. And I said, well, you know, I've got to go to Boston. And he goes, it's the last words I heard him say, actually. And he said, do you want me to come with you? Oh, God. So, you know, that's the incredible side of George. God, it's like Barbara f***ing Walters here, isn't it? You know?
Another major story tonight is the passing of George Harrison. The former Beatle died in Los Angeles from cancer, his family by his side. He was 58 years old. Harrison's life and music reached for the same notes, inner strength and inner peace, and struck a chord with millions. CBS's Mark Phillips reports on the death and life of George Harrison.
There's a Beatles song for just about every occasion.
I read the news today, oh boy.
And today, the news was bad. They gathered at the John Lennon Memorial in New York to mark the death of another Beatle. And then there were two. George Harrison's death, unlike Lennon's, was neither sudden, nor violent, nor shocking. His religious conviction, he had said, expressed in his first solo hit single, had prepared him for death. Of all the Beatles, George Harrison hadn't been the brash one, or the cute one, or the funny one. He'd been the thoughtful one, seeking not fame, but answers.
The purpose of life is to find out who am I, why am I here, and where am I going? That's what we need answering.
And Harrison, as his friends knew, had found those answers.
I'm just privileged to have known him, and I love him like he's my brother. It was a very sad day for me and for a lot of other people.
It's a big cigarette. I will. A big man.
George Harrison had had throat, then lung, then brain cancer. The cigarette gags, amusing when he was young, had long since stopped being funny. The man they called the reluctant Beatle is now getting the credit he is due. He was the musical backbone. His were the riffs the whole world played air guitar to. He led the group on its journey toward Eastern mysticism. And he, too, was the songwriter of enduring tunes. Even Sinatra called Something the best love song of the past 50 years. If the Beatles provided the soundtrack for a generation, Harrison provided the theme songs for his own life.
While things first pass, it doesn't take long to be from 17 to being 57. 40 years just goes like that.
In his life, George Harrison never saw himself as more than he was, a working-class rocker from Liverpool who was good enough and lucky enough to become famous around the world. More than guitars are gently weeping today. Mark Phillips, CBS News, London.
You know, they gave their money and they gave their screams, but the Beatles kind of gave their nervous systems, which is, you know, a much more difficult thing to give.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.